The recordings have been started.
Okay, thank you. There's the normal announcement about recordings having been started. If you don't want to be part of a call that's being recorded, now's the time to get off. Okay, starting the meeting. Glenn, could you do a roll call of those present, please?
Certainly, Avery. We have on the call Philip Shepherd.
Yes.
Mike Rodenbach.
Yes.
Zaid Jamil.
Yes.
Uta Decker. Absent. Christina Rosette.
Here.
Cyril Chua. Absent. Tony Holmes.
Yes.
Tony Harris is absent. He sent his apologies. He's traveling. Greg Ruth. Absent. Mary Wong. Absent. William Drake.
Oui.
Carlos Souza is absent. He sent his apologies. He is at the IGF today. Adrian Kinderis has also sent his apologies. He won't be on the call. Kim Ruiz. Absent. Stefan van Gelder will join the call about half an hour late. Jordi Iparaguira.
Hello.
Chuck Gomes.
Yes.
Edmund Chan.
Here.
Terry Davis. Absent. Avery Doria.
Yes.
Olga Cavelli. Absent. Alan Greenberg.
Here.
Han Chuan Lee.
Yes.
And for staff, we have Denise Michel. Rob Hogarth. Marika Koenigs, Liz Gaster, Margie Milam, Julie Headland, and we have invited James Bladel, who is the chair of the Fast Flux Working Group, to be with us on the call today and present. Have I left off anybody?
Okay. Thank you. So at the moment, we do not have quorum, so that means we won't do anything where there's a vote involved until such time as we do, assuming that we get there when Stefan joins a little later. So moving on in the agenda, the first item is update any statements of interest. I just need to say that I updated mine. I joined the NCUC since the last meeting. I've made it clear to the NCUC, and I wanted to make it clear to the council that in terms of GNSO council business, I'm still operating as an independent NOMCOM appointee and not in respect to NCUC, but in and participating in NCUC in terms of constituency and stakeholder formation issues. Anyone else wish to update a statement of interest? Okay, just like to remind people that when something changes that may have an effect on how you vote or may appear to have an effect on how you vote, please send in another statement and then mention it during the meeting. The next thing was the review and amendment of the agenda, which is even more complicated now than it was. For example, item 3 will also be moved, which is the approval of GNSO minutes, until such time as we have quorum, if we get quorum. Also, under the status section, as I understood Philip's request, the items to do with restructuring and improvement were moved to the top of the status heap, and then we would continue from 8-1. An item I stuck under any other business, which is the discussion of the letter requesting additional travel support, I've moved to after item 5, and the reason this one is on the agenda is because we weren't able to achieve consensus on it on the list. Therefore, we will probably have to take a vote on it, assuming that someone makes the motion that I propose and that we have quorum for taking a vote. Are there any questions or other amendments to the agenda? Okay, in which case we'll proceed with the agenda that way. And the next item on the agenda is the one, Fast Flux hosting Final Report. We invited James, who was the chair of that group, and brought it to a successful conclusion to sort of take us through a set of slides that I believe Marika prepared with him. James, the floor is yours. And then at the end of the presentation, I'll open up a queue for questions and comments.
Thank you, Aubrey, and good morning, everyone, or afternoon. And just as a matter of technical housekeeping, I still do not see the
neither do I.
Slides. And is there a quick way, someone, Marika or Margie, do you know how to bring that report back up?
They're coming.
Here it comes. Thank you.
Hello.
Hello, yes. Go ahead, James.
Okay. So good morning, everyone, and this is an overview of the FastFlux Working Group and the conclusion of the FastFlux PDP. And starting with the second slide, I will go into a brief background, and I don't want to annoy everyone this morning by actually reading the slides to them, so I'll just kind of give an overview, and then if we have questions, we can pick them up in line or at the end of the slide deck. So here's a timeline of the working group, beginning with the SAC report and the issues report. The initial report was published earlier this year. I became the chair of this group shortly after Mexico City, which I believe was in April. And my objective for the group was to incorporate all of the comments that we received and develop our set of conclusions and recommendations. Those items were the primary difference between the interim report and the final report that was recently published. So this slide illustrates the charter questions for the FastFlux Working Group, who benefits, who is harmed, which parties are involved, how are registrants and internet users affected, and what possible technical and policy measures could be implemented to address the illicit uses, as well as the impact and other recommendations. So beginning in 2008, we addressed many of these charter questions. This was a particularly interesting group that was populated by a number of security experts, and as a result, I think that there was a difficulty in achieving a unanimous or even a consensus level, so we really operated in areas of what was supported and tried to capture as many alternative views as possible. I think that the important thing to note about FastFlux, and anyone on the call that participated can certainly jump in with this characterization, is that FastFlux is a technique, and like many networking techniques, it can be used for good or for ill. And we were set up in this group and in our report to identify those different types of uses or implementations of FastFlux and distinguishing in our definitions between the two types of uses. So here are some of the challenges that we've encountered. The fact that this is some aspects of this issue fall outside of ICANN's, possibly fall outside of ICANN's remit. Definition, different types of monitoring tools, as well as the lack of quantifiable data in some instances, and then the different roles that can be played, not only by registries and registrars, but also ISPs, DNS service providers, hosting providers, et cetera. Everyone okay so far? I feel like I'm talking at my screen. So.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I did ask people to hold questions until the end, so.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry about that. And, you know, after rebooting this group in the spring, we were able to publish our final report earlier this week. Report addresses the charter question, and as a one-sentence synopsis, there were no recommendations for new consensus policy or changes to existing policy, but we presented a number of ideas for possible next steps. The next few slides do a bit of a deep dive into the charter questions, and I wanted to thank Marika for putting these together because it's a great synopsis of what otherwise is a 150-plus page report. So taking a look at the charter questions of who benefits, clearly we have a variety of different individuals, organizations, and entities that benefit from FastFlux. Including those that are setting up resilient networks, resilient against different types of DDoS attacks, operators of mobile networks. This could be not just in the traditional sense of mobile devices, but also mobile platforms like vehicles, ships, airplanes, et cetera. Free speech or advocacy groups. And, of course, criminal entities also use this to evade detection and intervention by contract parties, ISPs, and law enforcement. So who is harmed? And harm, I think, is focusing on the illegitimate uses of FastFlux, particularly those that would be victimized by the folks that were employing it for evasion or to delay any sort of interdiction of an illicit use. So who would benefit from the cessation of the practice? And there's a list of organizations there. It's fairly general. Getting into the questions of who is involved. We did receive constituency statements from the registry constituency that provided notes regarding their technical and policy options that are at their disposal to address and detect this issue. Registrar involvement is addressed on this next slide. And I think that with many of these issues, when we speak of involvement, we should probably identify that, you know, there's a difference between involvement and complicity. Further diving into the charter questions, we look at how registrants and internet users are affected by FastFlux hosting, and there are those that are legitimate and publicly beneficial uses that may even perhaps be transparent to registrants and internet users, and then there are those, of course, that are illegitimate and could make use of FastFlux as a predicate to launching an attack. Talking about some of the technical changes that we could possibly explore for identifying and remedying illicit uses of FastFlux. I think the first item that we've discussed was information gathering and information sharing. Because there are so many different and disparate entities that are involved in this process, it's important to have a mechanism by which they can compare notes, share data about different instances, and possibly interdict across the spectrum of all the different involved services and parties. I think that what we saw earlier with registries and registrars and ISPs is that stopping FastFlux at any one step in that chain simply moves the problem somewhere else and doesn't necessarily set up a bottleneck or a choke point where this the illicit uses of fast flux can be stopped all in one place. So in this case, collaboration, data gathering, and information sharing is key. Have some of the report then discusses some of the impacts of fast flux, both positive and negative, in terms of establishing limitations, guidelines, restrictions. One topic that was discussed at length on multiple occasions was rate limiting of time to live, or TTL values, and that is setting different rules regarding how frequently a TTL value can be updated and what some of the setting a floor on how rapid those changes can be. And the ultimate conclusion, I think, of this group was that while there's possibly some merit on a case-by-case basis in exploring these, none of these options were noted to be appropriate or viable in all situations. So there's really no silver bullet to taking out the illicit uses of fast flux. We then reached out to various entities, including those outside ICANN, such as the APWG, and some of the resources that are in the security industry and academia, to compile a list of best practices in terms of identifying and addressing fast flux. Slide to illustrate some of the constituency statements. We received numerous constituency statements, both formal and informal, from a variety of, I guess they're called stakeholder groups now, but what were at the time constituencies within the GNSO community. I think everyone understands that this is a double-edged sword, that it can be used for good or for ill. And there was certainly no uniform position on whether ICANN or ICANN policy development is the most appropriate way to pursue limitations on or to address illicit uses of the technique. But I think all parties agreed that further fact-finding, research, and data gathering was warranted in this area. So now we can get into the conclusions, and this is one of the sections that is new from the previous instance of this report, the interim report. And I will go through these a little more slowly. But the first conclusion that we arrived at, as I stated earlier, is that this is a networking technique. It can be used for a variety of purposes, both positive and negative. A variety of organizations can be involved. There's a list here of registries, registrars, ISPs, hosting firms, and other online businesses and organizations. And therefore, coordination and cooperation with respect to the illicit uses is therefore necessary. And what I mean by that is that in order to detect and mitigate when fast flux is being used for negative purposes, it's going to require multiple entities to cooperate. The next conclusion was that we found that a better understanding of fast flux would be supported by additional data gathering, perhaps DNS monitoring, and data sharing amongst all the parties that are involved. Because again, no one type of organization can interdict this on their own. Now I've messed up my slide here. Just a moment. There we go. We have some recommendations for the ICANN community, including how it can foster future coordinated coordination efforts and operational responses, including entities that often are considered to be outside of the ICANN community, such as security firms, DNS providers, and law enforcement organizations. Recognizing that fast flux is a technique to that's used to conduct internet fraud, and therefore it's part of a larger internet fraud and abuse issue. Setting up or operating a Fastflux network in and of itself is not necessarily a worthwhile criminal or fraudulent exercise, but it certainly helps to avoid detection of response to those types of activities. And the next step, of course, all the numerous and interdependent issues should be considered for any future policy development or next step implementation. So we put together a list of recommendations, and this was quite a lengthy discussion within the working group. And then Marika was very helpful in putting together a survey or a poll that would help us to rank the relative importance or prioritize the different recommendations. Unfortunately, the results of that survey were not conclusive. There were a variety of different priorities across the participants of the working group, and therefore we had no clear cut, number one, number two, and so we had to capture them all and give them somewhat equal weighting. Now, that said, there are some clear divisions between, let's say, the top two or three, and then there's a second section which is more broadly supportive, and then the third section that's fairly all the working group members felt that were interesting and worth pursuing, but we really couldn't receive significant support. So here are those recommendations listed in bullet form, so highlighting which possible solutions can be addressed by policy development, best practices, or industry solutions, considering whether the registration abuse working group, or sorry, pre-working group that's currently underway would incorporate illicit uses of Fastflux into its work, and ensuring that registries and registrars have the necessary discretion and purview within their agreements to act upon Fastflux, illicit Fastflux when it's detected. We proposed the idea of a Fastflux data reporting system, which is a shared resource that can collect and distribute information about detected Fastflux instances. We discussed the role of ICANN not only as a potential policy development body, but also as a facilitator and a collaboration venue for all of the different parties involved in developing their best practices. We looked at all of the other stakeholders that may be affected by this issue that are not necessarily actively participating within the ICANN community, and ways to reach out to them and get them involved in this issue. And we also wanted to propose that this issue is somewhat amorphous, and we would like to recommend that any further work on it have a very narrowly defined scope. So if there's ways to take this topic and break it into smaller and more specific component subjects, that those might be more easily and readily addressed. So here's a list of resources. The final report is linked to be included, but I think that that has been posted to Glenn's announcement, and it has been posted at the announcement on the ICANN website. The initial report link is there. We received numerous public comments, and we very thoroughly and carefully went through those, all of those comments, and ensured that they were at least addressed within the report, the final report. High traffic on the comment forum as well as the mailing list. And then we had a link to our wiki as well. So,
okay.
Taking a deep breath here, this is a large issue, many facets, touches almost all aspects of the community. Fastflux is a is a tool, and like all tools, it can be deployed by a variety of organizations and individuals for a variety of different ends. And the path forward is not necessarily clear, but we have some options that can be discussed further by the council.
Okay, thank you very much for the report. I'm going to open up a queue in a second. I wanted to sort of say two things first. One, I wanted to indicate that Tim Ruiz has joined us, and so now we do have quorum on the meeting. And two, I want to mention, from having watched the work that you did in this working group, that it was extraordinary work, and especially the way you handled the public comments was truly an exemplar of taking public comments seriously and addressing them in a very serious and considered way. So I think that's quite laudable. I'd like to open the queue for comments and questions at this point, and then we'll go into discussion of the motion that Mike has put on the table that I don't expect we'll get to voting on today, but just to have a discussion of that. But first, I'd like to go into questions or comments. Anyone wish to be in the queue?
Aubrey, please add Chuck.
Chuck, anyone else? Go ahead, Chuck.
Thanks, and I reiterate Aubrey's compliments, James, for the job you did in picking up the leadership on this. And, of course, Aubrey, thanks to the work you did for quite a few months there when you led this group and all the people that stuck it out to the end. At some point we need to, I think, formally express our appreciation to that, because it was quite a huge task.
That's something I'm going to propose as a friendly amendment to the motion when we get there.
The first question I have has to do with the first recommendation, both on the slide and in the report, and it says highlight which solutions, recommendations could be addressed by policy development, best practice, and our industry solutions. James, is that the solutions recommendations, is the intent of that recommendation to look at the recommendations that were made in this report, or to consider new ones in addition to the ones made in this report?
Thanks, Chuck. I think that if I can dodge that question a little bit by saying that those are both viable options. Initially, that I think that anything that's addressed in this report could be introduced into successor working groups, and I'm thinking here, of course, of the RAP as a component of their discussions. But there are recommendations for data collection and further collaboration, and it's certainly possible that other recommendations could stem from that body of work. So I guess it's somewhat open-ended at this point. We've made some fairly specific recommendations, but certainly it doesn't represent the entire universe of possible next steps.
Thanks. And the reason I ask that is because if, in fact, it was bounded by the recommendations in this report, a first step that the council could consider later on when we decide what to do wouldn't necessarily have to be a working group, but some initial staff work or a small working group just for certainly getting legal counsel's advice in terms of what fits for policy development, et cetera, would be a step. But we can look at that later. The next question is more a technical one, and not technical, but a clarification question in the report itself. In the list of members, there are, and it's on page 23, there's a several of the members have Roman numeral footnotes associated with them, but that's probably just me, but I couldn't find out what those stood for. They range from 3 up to 9. Marika, maybe you can help me on that if you're still on.
Chuck, I can jump in. Those are, I noticed that as well. They're not at the bottom of that particular page, but they are spelled out at the on the bottom of the last final page of the report. So maybe that's something that we can fix to make that a little more clear.
And is that the last page of the appendix or the last appendix?
I'm pulling that up now, sir. I'll have to take a look.
Yes, correct. They're endnotes, so they're completely at the end of the document.
the very end. Okay, I can look that up. We don't need to spend time on that because we don't have a lot of time. So the last thing on page 68 in the issues with the charter, first of all, I thought the issues of the charter that were captured there were same issues some of us raised right at the beginning and why we were concerned about introducing a PDP at that time and were more interested in data gathering and so forth. But it says in its upcoming revision of the PDP, does the working group necessarily see the PDP continuing? I think if I understand the context of the full report, that that's not the case, that it's kind of open-ended and there was no consensus there. Is that correct?
I think that your assessment is correct, that while we made some references to the possibility that it could be included as a component of one existing pre-PDP effort that's currently underway, but that any specific future PDPs would have to be have their issues coming from this data collection and collaboration effort that we propose, as well as going through and having a specific issues report that narrowly defines that particular issue. So there's no call for successor PDPs per se, but just a note that this could be a component of the registration abuse topic that's currently underway.
Thanks. And last of all, in that same paragraph, I thought a good suggestion was made there for working groups in general, and that's the GNSO should include an orientation of working group members as an early step for every group to familiarize participants with the PDP process. It seems to me that if it hasn't already been done or if the working team hasn't already considered it, that particular suggestion should be sent to the chair of the PDP process working team that's working on GNSO improvements and maybe the working group team, the PPSC, basically. A good suggestion, and I just hope that doesn't get lost because it is a good idea. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks. Chuck, I'll take that as an action item, and I'm sure that, you know, one of the staff members helping with the PPSC will also remember that, but I'll definitely take it as an action item to pass it on. I'd like to point out that Stefan has joined us now. Anyone else wish to ask a question or comment on the report at this point? I'll take a cue.
Can you add Tony to the...
Philip, Tony, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Philip. Okay, Philip. Are you on mute again?
It's Philip. I didn't ask to go in the queue.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I heard your name asking to go in the queue. Forgive me.
It was Tony Holmes, I believe.
I heard Tony. I thought I had heard a Philip and then a Tony. I apologize. Tony.
It's just a point of clarification. One of the things that was mentioned was that there was a point made that the ICANN community needs to consider a future coordinated response. I read into that it needs to be broader than GNSO. I don't know whether that's correct or not. But if that is the case, is that really an issue for council? And if it isn't an issue for council, where would that be addressed? I'm somewhat confused by that reference.
Do you have an answer? I mean, I can offer something of what I thought, but...
pulling up that section now. So, Avery, if you want to jump in, then I can...
I think one of the things that did come up in the discussions along the way when I was paying attention was that, of course, CCTLDs might have similar problems. And so in at least the first instance, I think one possibility would be that this could be another issue for joint work.
And Avery, just to follow up on that, wouldn't this be a good topic for the AXO in Seoul?
It could be. I'm not sure where we are on the AXO with meeting in Seoul and topics, but yeah, it could be. And I'll certainly note that as a possibility.
And that's a good point, Avery. This is James again, and I did want to point out that we'd identified some other groups as well, in addition to those that are traditionally thought of as being part of the ICANN community. We've thought of, for example, law enforcement and possible victims advocacy groups of online fraud and folks that are affected by this, by the negative uses of FastFlux as well.
Yes, certainly. I thought Tony was asking about which ones within the ICANN community, but certainly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
well, even broader than that, Avery, if I can come back on that.
Certainly, please.
I just wonder where that's going to get picked up, because if it is broader than council, where does the responsibility to make sure that that's followed up sit? Is it with council or not?
I guess any report that we do goes to the board, so, you know, it would certainly, if it's larger than council, it eventually sits with them. If it's something that we can do jointly with CCNSO and perhaps ESSAC, then perhaps, you know, instituting something joint is something that we can participate in. But certainly, I guess, if it goes beyond council, it becomes a board issue.
Okay, thanks.
It's Alan again.
Certainly. Alan, anyone else wish to be in the queue at this point? Okay, Alan.
Yeah, I mean, we're increasingly finding issues that cross domains, and my perspective is it's all of our responsibility to do what we can to try to initiate that. Whether it becomes a board issue because across the domains, or it simply means we have to reach out and try to do something bilaterally with another group, I think the details will vary from case to case. But I don't think we can absolve ourselves of responsibility because it's not solely our job.
Okay, I don't think anyone was suggesting that, but thank you. Anyone else wish to question or comment at this point? Oh, great. Thanks. Thank you, James. And now I'd like to actually ask Mike if you'd like to sort of introduce the motion you made. As I said up front, I am going to ask for a friendly amendment to the beginning of the resolve that sort of thanks the working group, James, and yourself as liaison for the incredible effort that was put into doing this. But please, would you like to introduce the motion, which you've made, I don't think it's been seconded yet, and while no constituency has yet asked to put it off until the next week, I certainly believe that it needs to be put off until the next meeting. But, Mike?
Okay, thanks, Ari. I agree with that. I think the council needs a little more time to digest this, and of course, any other friendly amendments can be considered if anyone has them. Generally, what the motion is seeking to do is just lay out very briefly what the group did and then have the council recommend a few further steps, which really are, there's nothing forceful in here. It's mainly, you know, encourage ongoing decisions. Have this issue thrown over to the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, essentially, so that they are aware of the report and can decide whether what that group is talking about might assist in dealing with illicit uses of FastFlux hosting as well. And to encourage that we look at the feasibility of a FastFlux data reporting system. Those to me are really the two kind of action items that are included here. It's basically throw part of this over to the RAP working group and then look at whether we can do a FastFlux data reporting system. Other than that, we should also say we're encouraging staff to examine the role that ICANN can play as a best practices facilitator, which to my mind really is something that we are doing in all of the various working groups anyway. I think it's become a reality that any working group can decide to propose best practices rather than contractual changes or consensus policy as an option. So I think that one's pretty much already dealt with, but eager to hear if James or Marika or anybody else has comments on it. And that's really the motion in a nutshell.
Okay, thanks. Marika or James, did you wish to add anything?
Thank you.
No, I think that's
okay.
Fine.
Okay. Any questions or comments at this point?
Chuck would like to in the queue.
Okay, Chuck. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, and just a couple related questions, Mike. In reading the report quickly and in looking at the motion, I believe that the resolve items track the report's recommendations exactly. Is that correct? And if so, the related question is, I assume that, is it correct to assume that the working group supports this motion?
Yes, it's a consensus motion of the working group. Yes, you're correct. It essentially just extracts the recommendations from the report.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else at this point? Okay, then, in bringing this item to a close, again, I want to thank you, James, for joining us, for making the report, and especially for leading this to what looks like a very successful conclusion on the working group. And I'd like to mention that I will keep the motion on the table for the next meeting, and we'll schedule a vote on it at our next meeting. Anything else on that at this point?
Were you going to add your friendly amendment, or
and
you?
I'll write that down and send that out, so that, or I'll actually just add it, and then people can look at it and send it out to the list, so people can look at it.
Good.
But it will just be a thank you to the working group, James as its chair, and to the liaison for the work they did in you know, producing this. And
okay. I'd also note that, you know, the motion would need a second before we vote.
Yes, we do need a second before it can be voted on. I'll second it.
And Aubrey Moore, this is James, more of a housekeeping issue here. I'm prepared to drop off the call and the meeting to you, but if I'm still in presenter mode, I hope that that doesn't disrupt anyone else's.
I think it's okay, because I think who else has presenter mode here? Just to make sure that you've got, because someone's got control of the Acrobat.
Aubrey, it's me, but I'm not doing a very good job at the moment. But
okay,
yes,
but you've got it, so it's fine for James to drop off. It won't leave us helpless. Okay, thank you again, James.
Thank you. Have a good morning.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. Okay, I'd like to mention also that Terry has joined us at this point. What I'd like to do is quickly go back to item 3 on the agenda, which is to approve the GNSO Council minutes of 23 July 2009. Do I have someone that will make the motion for those minutes?
I will, Aubrey. Chuck.
Thank you, Chuck. Do I have a second for those?
I'll second it, Aubrey. Stefan.
Thank you, Stefan. Is there any discussion or comments on those minutes? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of those minutes, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay. Are there any abstentions?
Aubrey, it's Christina. If we're talking about the meeting, the minutes from last meeting, I need to abstain.
Excuse me, I can't hear you.
If we're talking about the minutes from the most recent meeting, I need to abstain because I was not present.
Okay, so one abstention for 23 July. Okay, thank you. So the minutes have passed with one abstention. Okay, now moving on to item 5, which admin.
Sure. Well, this, there really hasn't been much update except this is the joint CCNSO, GNSO, IDN working group, the JIG. Not really any update. The CCNSO will have their council meeting on, I think, August 23rd. There has been some very minor editorial edits to the charter, and we're still looking at. I've been liaising with Zhang Jian of the CCNSO council, and things are still looking good for them to pass a resolution at the coming meeting. But what I did want to bring up is there are two things that we would also need to act on, which is to nominate the 5 members from the GNSO community into the working group, as well as to nominate a co-chair into the working group. If we can do some of that between now, or even today, and when they have their council meeting, then we can immediately start the working group thereupon. So this is sort of just a call for participants from, you know, interested people, constituency, to join the joint working group.
Before I open the queue for people to either question, comment, or volunteer to get their name on the list of possible five. In terms of the charter, if there are changes in the charter between now and when the CCNSO approves doing this, will we need to come back to the charter as a council?
Well, I think we covered this issue last time as well, and I think it seems like what is sensible to do is that if there is a major change or a change of substance, then we'll have to come back and come back to the council. If it's real, you know, very minor editorial changes, then I think we can accept it as being based on the charter that we passed.
Okay, and so the changes you said that have been made so far, they've all been of the minor category?
Right, it's some editorial
okay, great,
changes. So I'll send, once they have a vinyl version, I will send around.
Okay, thank
so
you.
If people don't feel it's a major thing,
just
okay.
A quick comment, Aubrey and Edmund. Isn't it true that we made changes before we approved the charter? We actually responded to some suggestions from the CCNSO regarding the charter, so they've already had some input into it. Is that correct?
That's correct. In fact, they have had quite a bit of edits to it.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to comment or ask a question?
Yeah, Avery, Stefan, please.
Okay, Stefan, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Stefan.
Just to say that I will volunteer. I think I did so before, but I'll volunteer for the group.
Thank you. Anyone else at this time?
Actually, I myself have sort of a question to sort of ask the council is really, in terms of nominating a person to co-chair the group, do we need any particular formal process? I'm happy to volunteer for that, but I don't know whether, you know, we need any particular process to do it.
I think my suggestion, and I'll open it up to others, my suggestion is once we have the names of the people that want to participate and I think your name marked as being in the co-chair, as long as, you know, it would be one of those questions where I would ask the council if there was any objection to this late and at perhaps our next meeting and move on from there. Does anyone think that would be an improper way to do that? So that's what I suggest then. Getting the list of five names together, at the moment you seem the most reasonable person to me personally, having basically been responsible for making this happen. And then, you know, check at our next meeting just to see if there are any objections to what you've put together. And I would suggest that people that want to either volunteer on our mailing list and certainly get in touch with you about, you know, if they've got questions about how much work is it going to be, et cetera, just to get going. And at the moment, I think there's two of you.
Okay. I just want to add one more thing is that a volunteer or participant doesn't have to be on the council. So if anyone in any constituencies who have people who are interested to participate, I think that's okay too.
In fact, it may even be really good since that's part of our whole charter here overall charter to try and expand the body of people who are participating in the work. So, yes, it's good to go out to the constituencies and see if there are others who are interested.
One charter question. I haven't gone back to look this up is why I'm asking it. Do we have to have a minimum of five? I think we worded it so that, five is desirable, but if we don't get five, we're okay. Is that right, Edmund?
That is correct.
Now, I'm encouraging that we get five because I think that would be very good. So I'm not suggesting any different than that, but I just wanted to understand the how we worded it.
Okay,
Avery, can you put me back in? Stefan, please.
Sure, Stefan. I think we may have also, I need to go back and check, we may have had another volunteer or two at the last meeting of people who may not be on this call, so I'll have to go back and check on that. Stefan.
Thank you. Two questions. One, Edmund, can you confirm that this is that there's no actual chair? There's two vice chairs from the two SOs. Is that correct?
So essentially, it's called co-chair.
Co-chair.
There's no one ultimate. There's no one particular ultimate chair.
Okay. And do you have any idea if they have five volunteers, or is there parity there? Do you know what's going on at their end?
I can't be sure, but I think there are interested people to participate.
Have answered it. Hi, the council will meet on the 24th of August, so there has not been any decision yet on who is going to be on the working group. So I think everything will be decided only during or after the 24th August meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments at this point? So I encourage people, talk to your constituencies, find your, you know, IDN experts who have some time to contribute, and get them involved. Okay, moving on. Okay, as I mentioned at the beginning, I stuck item 5A in. 5A is basically the question of the letter requesting support for current council members who would not be included in the new council to also get travel support. I had written a letter and had given basically a two-week period in which to find consensus on that. There was not consensus. The question basically centered on what did mandate mean, and within the process that we were following, mandate meant there was consensus, which meant there was no further objection from anyone on the council list to the letter being sent. We did not reach that state, so therefore I basically crafted a quick motion, which was, and it hasn't been made or seconded, I just crafted it, whereas the plan is to seat the new council in Seoul, and current council members should be no longer be council members at that time, resolve to send the following letter. And the letter is almost the same one that I had floated for consensus on the list. And it's a letter from me to Kevin Wilson, CFO. I've been mandated by the GNSO Council by a vote of X to Y to request support not only for the members of the new bicameral council to be seated in Seoul, but also for those current council members who may not be continuing on the new council due to the reorganization. The reason this request is being made is to provide continuity to the GNSO Council at this time of restructuring, reorganization, and improvement. Thank you. So what I added was by a vote of. So basically I'd like to open up discussion on that, and I'd like to take a vote on this at the end of that discussion, assuming I have someone make the motion and second it. And open the queue.
This is Tim.
Tim. Anyone else?
Philip.
Philip. Anyone else? Go ahead, Tim.
Do we typically vote on motions that haven't been, I mean, how long has this been up? And I have to apologize, I've been on vacation.
Okay. What I sent in the mailing list is, as a consensus thing, this has been up for 2 weeks. So basically, given the time constraints of all of this, given the fact that this has been a topic for the last 2 weeks to try and achieve consensus on it, I was hoping the council would allow for a vote to be taken on this today as opposed to pushing it off yet another week. But it has the letter, with the exception of the additional clause of by a vote of, has been on the table for 2 weeks and under discussion.
Right, right. Okay, the only other comment that I really have is just that, you know, that most of the meetings that occur at the end of the year like that, that there's quite often some change in the council, and we deal with that. I realize it could be a significant number, of counselors at this particular meeting that are different. However, I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. And even if it is, you know, again, dealing with that turnover is something we have to face on an almost annual basis or annual basis. So I don't really see that where this is that much different than what we've dealt with previously, other than, you know, the number of constituencies that might have to be dealing with it. But I don't see that as a reason to ask for additional funds and you know, additional expenses where I can do to have to figure out how to deal with in order to fund that. So that's I think that our discussions with registrars have pretty much echoed the same feeling. So.
Okay, thank you. Philip?
Avery, could you add me to the list, please, Stefan?
Certainly, Stefan.
Yeah, well, first, just for form, I'd like to propose a motion, so we have that on record. Secondly, I think we are, on this particular meeting, I think there are probably three unique things that are happening that justify this. I mean, one of which we have, for the second time in 10 years, a major reorganization of ICANN in terms of our structure. So there is a major change happening that is due to culminate at this particular meeting. Secondly, it will be the first time that term limits start to hit certain councillors, and thus continuity that might otherwise have happened will no longer be happening. And thirdly, a number of issues that require particular continuity issues to be looked at very carefully are things like the policy development process and all the various work that's been done by the policy steering group and its work teams, and also some of the operational staff and their work teams, that is not yet complete and we're led to believe will probably not be complete by SAWL. So there'll be some of those pending issues. And therefore, I think the issue of continuity is particularly pertinent for this meeting, unlike, I think, any other ICANN meeting that has been in the whole history of ICANN. And therefore, it was a suggestion we made that it would seem appropriate for what may be a relatively small number of retiring councillors to also be afforded the opportunity to go to SAWL. And as I mentioned before, also this year, perhaps as a fourth element of uniqueness, this year certainly for those from Europe and other parts of the world, all three meetings of ICANN have been long-haul meetings, and that has caused some specific budget issues for amongst volunteer members.
Thank you. Stefan?
Please put me in the queue too, Avery.
Okay, Chuck. Stefan?
Thanks, Avery. I'm sorry, I was dropped off the call, so I've missed everything that Philip said, which is a pity. I hope I'm not repeating any of the points made. I think that there's two issues here. One is, can we find a way to help incoming councillors and make their job easier by some kind of assistance from the outgoing councillors? And I think that's the basic idea behind this request for there to be some funding for the outgoing councillors. That has to be balanced with the fact that funding is not limitless, and as Tim pointed out earlier, there's certainly a feeling within the registrar's constituency that further funding shouldn't be given at this time. My own personal thoughts are that we need to find whatever the decision on this, and I'm really a little bit indecisive on this one, unfortunately, because of the view expressed by my constituencies I've just mentioned. But I do feel strongly that whatever the solution, there is a way for new councillors to be helped into their new position.
Thank you. Sure.
Yes, I wanted to follow up on something that both Tim and Philip said. I agree with Tim that we generally do handle the changes fairly reasonably, but I would also note that this time I think we're going to have a very large number of additions of new people to the to the council. We know there's going to be at least three from the non-commercial stakeholder group, and for those, there are possibility of many more because of people being termed out. So I think I don't have Glenn's nice summary of the changes that she sent out in front of me, but I think we have a fairly significant possibility of having quite a few new people. And I think in follow-up to what Stefan's suggesting, that one way we can facilitate the transition of quite a few new people joining would be to encourage their attendance at this meeting. And I'll qualify that with the fact that the registry constituency isn't uniform in terms of their opinion on this, but this is my personal opinion.
Okay, thank you.
Could you add me to the list, please, Avery, Tony?
Okay, Tony. Anyone else wish to be on the list this time?
I guess Bill.
Okay, Tony, and then Bill. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Tony.
Okay. I just wanted to emphasize, I think, what a number of people have said, that this is about handover and ease of handover, and we clearly aren't going to be in a position when we get to Seoul where everything is bedded down in the way that would make that transition easier. So that's the crux of this. But I think before we get to voting on a motion, one of the things we should do is get a clear understanding of just what constituencies are impacted, so the numbers that we're talking about, because to take a vote without having that information, I think, is to take it with part of the puzzle still missing.
Okay, thank you. Bill?
I agree that that would be useful information, but as a general matter, NCUC doesn't see why this is necessary. In our particular case, we're going to have four new councillors, but three of them, we have no idea who we're going to be given, and it's going to be a rather interesting experience. But for us, it just doesn't make sense to have registrants paying for this. I would think you can achieve continuity by other kinds of coordination. People don't need to be physically in the same place to do that. So I don't really understand the argument that this is a special situation that requires expenditure of registrants' money.
Okay. Avery, could I come back on that, Tony?
Certainly. Tony, anyone else wish to come back? Okay, Tony.
I'd just like to understand what these other methods are that could achieve the same coordination as to having the existing councillors and the new councillors together.
That would have to be defined in cooperation with the staff, I suppose. I don't have in my pocket a set of mechanisms for doing this, but clearly we need a generalizable solution because we do have a lot of turnover. But I don't see why having a few constituencies being able to bring in people who are no longer actually operative is really necessary for this.
Can I say something, Stefan?
Stefan, anyone else wish to be in the queue?
Jordi, please.
Okay, Stefan and then Jordi. Go ahead, Stefan.
Thanks. One way, I think, to answer that question, and that's what possibly Chuck was implying earlier on, is to have the new councillors attend one or two of the prior meetings, the telephone meetings. Obviously, the problem with that is that we don't actually know who those councillors are, and as far as the other constituencies are concerned, we don't know when those councillors will be chosen. I mean, Chuck made a reference to a document sent by Glenn, which I haven't seen yet, so maybe the information is in there, but I certainly don't know, apart from the registrar's constituency, what the timetable is for the elections for the other constituencies. So if that information is available somewhere, I'm sure it'd make our job a lot easier and be very helpful for us to determine if we can fit in before Seoul, if the general consensus is that there'd be no further funding, no extra funding allowed or afforded, then can we see if we can fit in an extra meeting just before where the old and new councillors would be able to attend together. But I do, in general, have to agree that nothing can replace a face-to-face meeting. It's certainly been my experience that coming into the council that it became a lot easier once I'd met the people.
Okay, thank you. One thing I wanted to point out, I don't believe that Glenn sent around the list. If I understand correctly, I think the list of possible changes was contained in a message that Rob sent.
Ah, that's why I couldn't find it.
And, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that, and in fact, it's something that I think is later on the agenda.
Aubrey, Christina, can you add me to the queue?
Excuse me?
And Tim.
Okay, I missed. There was,
Christina.
I had Jordy. Did I get a Christina?
Yes, please.
Christina, and then Tim. Okay. Jordy.
Yes. Well, maybe I missed also some messages on that topic. But the feeling I got when reading it is that it's a kind of open thing in the sense that we are just asking more money for sending more people to Seoul, and it seems that there are no limits there. And, well, I do understand that for certain constituencies or for certain people that might be an issue. But for the rest of us that are here for business and representing certain interests, I mean, this should be part of our expenses, if you want, or our investments. So, well, I don't know. I would like to see some limit of framework in which we move. So maybe I missed that message that you are mentioning. But, well, that's what I would like to say. I think we need some limits on who and when and why and how. And I'm talking on personal capacity because, as Chuck said, there is not an agreement on the DRC constituency. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Christina.
Just two observations. First, in terms of having additional meetings before Seoul, if I have the timing right, I think at this point we only have calendared one meeting in October before the Seoul meeting. So I think it would be difficult to squeeze additional meeting in that period, given that in many cases any new elections won't have happened until shortly before September 30th. Second, speaking personally, my very first ICANN meeting was also my very first council meeting, and I was the only IP constituency representative to the council who was able to attend that meeting. And I can tell you that it would have been extraordinarily helpful, and I think I would have been able to make a much more substantive contribution had there actually been another councilor present. There were other constituency members there. There were other constituency officers there. But nonetheless, I think it would have been extraordinarily valuable. And I guess one point to kind of throw out is there a middle road here? In other words, could it, for those constituencies that have objections to having new councillors and all the old councillors, would it be accessible to perhaps have one or two of the former councillors? Would that be something that would be, acceptable? Would that address your concerns, yet at the same time having that value that the outgoing counselors can add?
Thank you. Tim?
Yeah, I guess we have two teleconferences in September scheduled, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I just wanted to make sure that was true.
Yeah,
I realize that that doesn't account for, allowing for elections and things, so I didn't realize that could still get tight. But on a slightly different note, just it seems to me that another possible middle ground might be focusing on what to me is more of a long-term issue, and that is that it seems the new travel policy is specifically for funding counselors, where up till then, we as a council, I believe, we had supported the concept of funded slots or funded positions that the constituencies could use in a manner that they felt was most advantageous to them. So I think, if whether we move forward with this motion or not, I would like to encourage council to consider reopening that discussion with staff, that the constituencies be, allowed a certain amount of funds or a certain number of slots, and let them decide how best to use that within their constituency. And that might help to some extent with being able to, split the funds across multiple counselors, that kind of thing. So if my understanding of that's wrong, then what the staff intends to do is something different. And I apologize, but it seems to me that that's where we're heading, and I'm not sure that's the best course of action or that best fits the needs of the constituencies.
Okay, thank you. What I would suggest at the moment is, first of all, there's been at least one constituency that's asked to put off the vote, and it doesn't have a second yet, so I think we can put it off one more week. One of the, then there's two other issues. One is to send it to the to send it back to the team that's been dealing with travel. I do believe that if I understand the current policy correctly, and I know it doesn't call itself a policy, but if I understand it correctly, exceptions can always be requested. So even if we don't have a it worked out in terms of the policy that a constituency can pick to pay for A instead of B, it's quite possible that one could put in a exception request saying constituency A is asking to pay for person X instead of person Y. So that could already probably occur within the policy as currently drafted. And then the other thing is, I guess people should, you know, continue to discuss this. One thing we won't know is until the new members are elected, we might have an idea of how many new ones there would be, but I don't think we'll have a good count because there are several elections that will need to be held on people who aren't term limited but whose terms are ending. And so I think it'll be very difficult to know this before the end of September, and by then it would be too late to make the request. So I think we need to take this back to the list. I think we need to take it to the drafting team on travel policy. Olga's not on the meeting because she's at the Rio IGF meeting, regional IGF meeting, so I'll make sure that I, you know, pass this on to her as an item for that group to consider, and hopefully we can have a revised thing to vote on at the next meeting.
Avery, it's Helen. Could I have a quick comment?
Sure.
Yep. With regard to what Tim was saying, my understanding, and I'm pretty sure of it, is that the number of travel slots is geared based on the number of counselors, but there is no requirement that it be used for counselors. That is up to council and the constituencies to decide.
Yeah, I think we need to clarify that with Kevin, but yeah.
This is Denise.
Yes, Denise.
If I may.
Certainly, you
That's
can clarify
correct.
It now.
The GNSO has essentially 21 travel slots, and it's up to the GNSO to indicate how those travel slots will be allocated, and they are not connected to council seats.
Oh, okay, thank you. Okay, then. So then it becomes a exercise for the drafting team, as in the past, perhaps, to just figure out what the list is. So anyhow, I'll table that for now until the next meeting, unless there's any other comment on it. And move on to the next agenda item. Next agenda item is number 6, which is discussion of remaining GNSO council transition matters necessary to seat new council in Seoul. And I believe, Rob, you have this agenda item to talk us through?
Yes, Aubrey, thanks. I think I have about 15 minutes, and so I've structured my remarks into three main areas. One, a contextual one to inform you what happened at the board meeting, just to give that some context. Secondly, a discussion of next steps, and I'll be referring to the documents I circulated earlier this week for that purpose. And then third, I think really looking for input from council members on logistics and next steps and how you guys want to proceed. At the end of each section, I'll stop for questions, too. Just a general review of what took place at the 30 July board meeting with respect to GNSO restructuring. The board approved the 4 new stakeholder group charters, paving the way now for the additional work that's necessary to seat the new council in Seoul. They also took action and approved the board seat selection process for board seats 13 and 14. They discussed the new constituency petitions, but took no action. They also
I'm losing his voice. Am I the only one?
Excuse me?
I'm losing his voice completely. Am I the only one?
I was hearing okay.
Okay, sorry to me.
Speak closer to your
on a cell phone.
Microphone or telephone or whatever you're using, Rob, please.
Okay, will do. Sorry, Jordy. And then finally, we staff updated the board on the progress with respect to the bylaws amendments package
and discuss with the board the need to circulate a version 2 of that comprehensive package. So that's what took place at the board meeting, sort of setting up for us the next steps. And Denise, when she reported what took place at the board meeting for GNSO Council restructuring, highlighted that we'd be making an effort to put together the key tasks and timetables for achieving the restructuring in Seoul, and I circulated that earlier this week. I'm going to touch on each of the issues, but really just on a high-altitude sense. If any of you would like to discuss more details, I'd be happy to get into that. But essentially, we identified 7 major activities that are necessary between now and Seoul. The first one is the bylaw amendments. That has to be resolved. We've posted those for public comment. The board is scheduled at this point to approve or discuss those at the 27 August meeting. The second major area is the board appointments to the GNSO Council for the 3 additional new members of the NCSG. And that process has started. Applications will be received through the end of August, and then the board will make a decision at its 30 September meeting. So in light of the discussion you guys just had about travel funding, we know there are those 3 additional slots, but we don't know who's going to be in those and won't likely have names till the end of September. With respect to stakeholder groups, each group, I guess, will, you know, make its own decisions, but 2 key areas that we identified were the formation of the executive committees and the election or appointment, however you guys decide to do so, of your various GNSO council representatives. Another important area, of course, is constituency reconfirmations. In light of the board's decision with respect to stakeholder groups, they've asked us to reach back out to the existing constituencies, dust off some of those previous discussions we had about the charter documents. What we have discussed, and as a staff suggestion, is that those conversations, with everything else going on and on your plate, will mainly just focus on making sure that we have the right structural elements in place, making sure that the charters are changed to reflect things like constituencies versus stakeholder groups or vice versa, and not get into a lot of the more detailed elements that are going to be developed by the work teams and others. But that'll be something that we'll have individual discussions with each constituency on. Another area that you guys have discussed in the past that's going to need to be addressed is the nominating committee appointees to the GNSO Council. As you may recall, the restructure drafting team recommended that the NOMCOM make a decision as to assigning the 3 NCAs to the various 2 voting slots and 1 non-voting slot, but there are still issues that you guys are going to have to discuss as to what criteria the NOMCOM may want to use to do that, and a broader issue that Roberto and the SIC are exploring with the NOMCOM as to whether the NOMCOM will be in a position to even make those decisions here toward the end of the 2009 term of the existing NOMCOM. So that's something we can talk about in more detail later. The last 2 major areas are truly transitional but very important for a Seoul seating, and those are having some defined council operating procedures. And we've outlined in the document that I shared with you a potential timetable for addressing that, getting council input and the rest, but I think there's definitely needs to be some further discussion there. And then, of course, finally, the election of the GNSO Council officers. There are some provisions that the restructure drafting team still needs to talk about in the context of balloting after the first ballot, if someone's not elected to be chair on the first ballot. And then the individual houses have to have some collaboration and discussion about how they are going to conduct their election of the vice chairs. I'll pause there for questions.
Any questions or comments at this point? I'll take a cue. Okay, I'd say go on, Rob.
Thanks, Avi. The one thing I'd like to note about what I circulated earlier in the week is that we have outline some projected time frames. Individual constituencies and stakeholder groups can do things much earlier if you all choose to do so. What we did in terms of setting out some of the time frames was to try to identify the latest possible date by which we thought certain things would need to happen. And again, I think that as we get into perhaps a future restructure drafting team discussion, we can perhaps massage or talk about the details of some of those dates. There was another document that I circulated, and that was intended mainly for general information and planning. It was entitled GNSO Council Restructure Draft Implementation Plan. And because there are a number of outstanding decisions that still need to be made, we took the liberty of throwing out some suggestions, and I think, Chuck, you pointed out earlier or acknowledged that Glenn had made a tremendous contribution to helping us outline the status of the existing councilors and what might be some potential dispositions that take place with the various seats. And so we produced a table that basically lists all the existing councilors, their terms, and potential actions that the individual stakeholder groups might take in selecting their council representatives. We make no judgment about how you guys are going to do that. A number of folks whose terms are ending, there'll have to be new elections. But I recall in the past, a number of you have made comments that you all might approve an entire new slate of potential council representatives. The point that I'm making there, though, is that that is a stakeholder group discussion and decision, and as long as you all stick to the timetables that we've set out, which is essentially to have those people elected, appointed, or somehow decided by the end of September, that we should be in good shape for, you know, getting everybody on a plane and with the appropriate visas in time to be seated in Seoul. Does anyone have any questions on that?
I'll
second
you. Okay. Please proceed.
Thanks. Finally, just the general discussion that I think would be useful on this call would be sort of what the next steps are. My sense is that there needs to be a gathering of the restructure drafting team to go through some of the details here. Chuck, Avery, and some of the staff had some broader discussions earlier in the week about the action plan and the documents that we are using. You'll all note that in the action plan that's posted on the website, we still have the old document, which details a number of the issues that the restructure drafting team was addressing. That document, in tandem with the timetable that I circulated earlier in the week, we think would be useful tools for you guys to take a look at and use as a mechanism for some further discussions within the restructure drafting team. You know, some of those details that have to be discussed include things like staggering terms. You know, I don't know that you want to bring on entire new slates with the same terms. At the same time, with the transition being set up the way it is, there's a potential nice dovetailing with the existing terms, some of the people who are remaining. So there may be some discussions within the restructure drafting team about whether that methodology is going to work or whether there need to be some changes. And I'd welcome anyone's comments.
Okay,
about,
open
you know,
a queue.
Meetings.
I have one question for you while looking for anyone else that wants to be in the queue. Is with that issue of the staggering of terms and whatever at this point almost be more a stakeholder group, individual stakeholder group figuring out how it wanted to proceed than actual a restructuring team? One of the things I haven't even been sure, even though I've been trying to schedule such a meeting, is I wasn't even really sure that there was something for the restructuring team to actually do at this point, but perhaps others can speak to that issue.
That's an excellent point, if I can respond to that. A couple of the action items or decision points that the drafting team had noted earlier and then put off because they weren't ripe yet included, what is the council interaction with the stakeholder groups? What is the council interaction with the voting houses, if any? Because that's, you know, that's really a function of counting votes, not necessarily
different structures. So I think there needs to be at least some venue, whether that's via email or at least one touch base call, where you all have those kinds of discussions.
As I say, I'm trying to schedule the call, but if I can't get enough people to participate, that's almost a voting with one seat. But anyway, anyone else wish to speak?
Philip, thank you.
Okay, Philip, anyone else? Go ahead, Philip.
Okay. I'd just like to make one founding comment, and that is that on behalf of the BC, I think we were rather concerned about the way that there were some last-minute proposals for change to the stakeholder group charters that effectively subverted the process of being able to go back to constituencies to discuss, agree and go forward. And that seemed to be a fundamental affront to the bottom-up process, particularly with something as important as a charter of self-formed organizations. I just wanted to make that point formally so it's on the record of the council meeting. Secondly, in terms of practicality and the timetable, I think the job staff have done is very useful and helps us all in terms of setting our own timetables. And I think as regards the next chair and the vice chairs for the new council, it's probably less important, really. I mean, obviously, you want to have the new council in place in order to vote for their new chair, and the houses in place in order to vote for their vice chairs. But I think the vice chairs are less important, clearly, than the chair in terms of functionality. That can always be done a little later if that's more practical, when people get to know others who may be standing for that. But in any case, I mean, I think, as we have done in the past history of the council, it's entirely possible to simply elect a chair for the length of a meeting in order to have a functional meeting. So we needn't be too hung up on the timetable there. I think the other timetables in terms of getting councils elected are the key ones.
Thank you, Philip. When we get to the next section, you'll see that I put together some suggestions in terms of agenda on those items, and then people can, either accept those or not. Anyone else wish to make a comment at this point? Do people generally think that we should get a restructuring meeting rescheduled to talk about these pending issues? And it's a loaded question because thinking we should means either you or people from your constituency that are sort of backing you up need to get involved in that meeting. So what do people think? Should we get a meeting together as soon as possible to go through these issues, or is it fine to deal with them as a council on mailing lists and in our upcoming meeting?
Stefan,
anyone else?
Chuck.
Anyone else? Go ahead, Stefan.
I think a lot of the issues that Rob talked about are SG issues and should be dealt there first. I'm sure a meeting of the restructuring team would be useful, but they will have a hard time solving SG issues.
Okay, thank you. Chuck?
Yeah, I'm comfortable either way. The council working it or the restructure group, and then if we can't get enough people in the restructure group to do it, I think it would be okay to even a subset of that group, if they could come back with some suggestions, would still be would be constructive. But I do think whichever route we take, we need to do it fairly quickly.
Okay. Well, I will certainly attempt to schedule a meeting. If I understand what you're saying is, however many people we can get together, we should have a meeting.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else wish to comment on this before we move on?
Aubrey, yes, this is Rob. I had one other comment, if I could share it. The GNSO operations work team met earlier this week. You've all tasked them, of course, with working on developing the operating procedures. One of the things that they discussed was the value of having counselor input. And so a number of you may be getting communications from your work team representative just asking for you to give a sanity check to some of the work that they have done. The thought was that they didn't want to have something produced as recommendations without some pre-look
particularly knowing the expertise that a number of you would bring to that table. So just keep an eye out for some communications from folks in that realm.
Okay, thank you. Any final comments before we move on? Okay. The next item I had on the agenda, I believe, is just the first look at the scheduling for the next meeting. Part of the reason I'm doing it what seems really early is because of the new scheduling and meeting regime. These things have to be done, I think, 3 weeks in advance or some such thing. We have to have posted agendas far in advance. A really good idea, but our previous working methods would not have given that. So what I did was I just started and had a little bit of conversation with Chuck and the supporting staff people earlier this week, and scheduling along the same format as always, with there being Saturday and Sunday chunked up into various ways. Hope no one is surprised that there's Saturday meetings planned. Then there's the Monday where I don't know yet whether there's an AXO meeting or not, and I apologize. I'm just not clear on whether we're scheduling one or not, and we should be. I don't mean we should be scheduling one. We should be clear on whether one is being scheduled. And there's a joint CCNSO, GNSO lunch where we have not discussed yet what agenda we may or may not have. There's the Wednesday public meeting, and there's the Thursday follow-up meeting. Now, in terms of the Saturday meeting, and these are on the wiki, in terms of the proposed Saturday meeting, what I'm initially recommending is that, A, this would be a chance for the two houses to meet. Now, by and large, what Rob said about the houses just being a voting structure as opposed to an institutional structure or an organizational structure is indeed the way things seem to be defined, yet there is one activity that is house-centric and house-organizational, and that is the election of a vice chair. Now, in response to what Philip had mentioned earlier, because of the way the bylaw suggestions are written, that if a new chair can't be elected, the two vice chairs, one from each house, perform the chair role until such time as a new chair is elected. So it struck me that it might be good for the two houses to meet as houses at the beginning of the meeting, Saturday morning, to elect a vice chair as well as do any other housekeeping that they may want to do as houses. That there be a meeting to discuss the council rules and procedures that will have been put on the table by then. That the afternoon is when we normally get our slot with Kurt and his staff and others to talk about new GLT, CTLD implementation issues and catch up on what's happening there. So I figured we would make a request. I've become fairly accustomed to the fact that Sunday they're fairly well occupied with the board, and that if they do have time to meet with us, it's generally on the Saturday. So I'm making a presumption. I'd also think it'll be a good time for an update on the Who Is studies and a discussion for the RFP for those studies, because those are scheduled to be out by then, I believe. So that was the first sort of list of possible Saturday items. Going on to Sunday.
Hey, Aubrey?
Yes.
This is Tim.
Tim, yes.
Can I just ask a administrative question about this? Since there's some question about travel funding and, you know, who the councils are actually going to be, et cetera, I think Glenn had said that they were holding a certain number of rooms for councilors at the venue. And I think that's important to understand. But also whether those were being held for beginning Friday night or, you know, when they were being held beginning and through, given that the council is always there on working days, Saturday and Sunday. I just wonder if we could clarify that.
Certainly. Glenn, do you know?
Yes, this is Glenn. The rooms are being held so that councillors can arrive in time on Friday to start meeting.
So from Friday night. Yeah.
From Friday night, yes.
Thank you. Is that okay, Tim?
Yeah, and how many rooms again, Glenn, do you know?
25 were asked for, Tim.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, moving on to Sunday. And as I say, this is if you look at the sheet, I'm calling it possible agenda. I just felt the need that we had to get started on this and we can continue discussions. Sunday was the opportunity for working groups and drafting teams to meet. A call is going out or has gone out to the various chairs, finding out who wants to meet. It could possibly be some time slots also on Saturday. I'm not sure. But most of the things seem to be involving, no one ever wants to meet when the GTLDs are being talked about. And I doubt anyone's going to meet when who is being talked about. So there's opportunity for working groups and drafting teams. There'll be reports and discussions from selected PDP working groups. Question is, which are ready for such a treatment? They'll be prepped for the CCNSO GNSO meeting, be prepped for the GAC GNSO meeting. I have not had conversations with Giannis yet to figure out, start talking about what the topic of the time is. If people in this group have suggestions for what those topics should be, you know, please put them on the list and we can come up with, you know, what we believe should be a suggested topic and I can present it to Giannis. There's a prep for the board dinner. We don't have topics for that yet. Again, I suggest that, if anybody has good suggestions for that, we put it. If there's multiple ones, I'll run one of the doodle polls on that and as I've done in the past. So that's Sunday. Going then to Monday, I don't have anything yet on the, as I said, the CCNSO. I don't know whether there's an AXO meeting yet. On the Wednesday meeting, structuring it the same way as normal with three or four topics, going through the presentation of the overview, the open discussion, and then, you know, next steps or vote if any is appropriate. The one item I did put on there as a first item is an election of a chair. And basically what I was hoping is that also on the Saturday, I neglected to include that, would be a chance further for the candidates to speak to the council members, that there would be an election of a new council chair that would start out with public statement by the candidates, a Q&A, and then a beginning of the vote with an activation of the absentee ballot for a 24-hour period for anyone that wasn't there. The hope being that, you know, if we can have a candidate elected by the new council that gets the 60% of each house that will be in the resolution, that then that person will be able to take over the chair during the Thursday meeting. In terms of just my role in the council, as a council member, because of the way NOMCOM works, I will be a council member until midway through the board meeting when the old board ends and the new board starts is when the new NOMCOMs end and start. So I will still be a council member as of the Wednesday and the Thursday, but my view is if we can elect a new chair on the Wednesday and a 24-hour absentee ballot, then the new chair could basically co-chair and then take over the meeting on Thursday. The way I'd envisioned the Thursday meeting was that I would sort of start off with a recap of the meeting, and then the new chair would take over with the planning for the future as we've done in the past. But anyhow, the other topics, I have to spell things correctly, and then three to-be-determined topics for the Wednesday meeting. I don't have a clear view yet of what they are. If other people have a clear view of what they should be, please contribute that to the list. And then that was about it. The Thursday meeting is as I said, split, always split between a recap and the future. So the way I was structuring it initially was that I would chair the recap, announce the new chair, and then move on with the new meeting. So that's the way it is. As I say, it's a first draft, definitely open to changes, comments, discussion, but that's what I've started with, so we have something to talk about. Does anybody wish to comment or question or at this point on this?
Reach Christine, I do.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I just have two general comments. One is really more directed to ICANN staff, and that is that, you know, I realize that we're trying to get a lot done in this relatively small number of days, but I've gotten a lot of feedback, particularly with regard to the Sydney meeting, about really important and relevant sessions being scheduled kind of simultaneously so that there was really no way for people to attend both. And to the extent that we could perhaps try and schedule things so that you don't have kind of two substantive sessions going on at the same time, that would be great. The other suggestion that I've gotten from a lot of folks, and I think this is obviously some of it is topic specific, but I think it really goes to a broader issue that a lot of the people, you know, IPC-related people who were at Sydney thought that it would have been much more helpful and productive to perhaps use Monday afternoon for a substantive, the substantive kind of policy discussion sessions like, or topic sessions, for example, like the IRT malicious conduct and the e-crime that were on Wednesday and Thursday, put something like that Monday afternoon because by the, you know, as you get kind of farther on in the week, people are getting tired, people are getting burned out, and people are having to leave. And that, you know, there was just a general view that while the joint SOAC session was interesting, that people really found that it would have been better to really put some of those other sessions earlier in the week. And I realized that we're not going to have the same situation with regard to the IRT, but in this next draft of the African Guidebook, we are going to be seeing for the first time the recommendations or the conclusions with regard to the root server stability and the malicious conduct recommendations. And I think rather than putting those discussions kind of Wednesday or Thursday so that people are kind of running around having multiple conversations on the same topic, I think it would probably be more efficient if we could front-load it.
Thanks. And in fact, that second point has been an item of discussion among the chairs and the various groups in terms of the XO, in terms of, I think, you've very much spoken in the same vein that GAC had spoken, wanting those things earlier as opposed to later. The other half of the conversation had been what the purpose of the XO was to get us on a similar page before we had all our meetings. And really, it was still questioned there. As I say, I don't even know if there is an XO meeting this time, but I'll certainly bring that back to the group that, you know, there's certainly that feeling on that one. And, of course, the staff can speak in terms of the rest of the schedule.
Right. I mean, and I appreciate that. And just to give you an example, I know that, you know, a number of people were a little irritated that, you know, the IRT was kind of going from session to session to session to session. But if we'd been able to really have that conversation on the Monday, have that presentation on the Monday, those additional follow-up individual conversations wouldn't have been necessary. And again, that's not going to be, that particular topic is not going to be as much of an issue in Seoul, but instead, I think you're going to have the same situation with regard to malicious conduct, which
yep.
for many folks is more important.
Okay.
Not me, but.
Thank you.
Could I follow up on that, Aubrey?
Certainly.
Uh-oh.
And I'd like to get in the queue, please.
I'll be brief. Over the last few years, we've made a lot of good progress, I think, in minimizing the duplication of meetings that people have to make choices between, so there's been less conflict. I thought that we digressed in Sydney, and there were some very serious conflicts that occurred. And I would really support Christina's suggestion that to the extent that we have issues that go across multiple constituencies and SOs, et cetera, it's much more efficient to have a meeting that is that everyone from all of those groups can attend rather than having the same topic covered in multiple sessions during the week. And that's a really key issue in terms of scheduling. And so I really support what she's saying.
Okay, thank you. Denise, was that...
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I thought I recognized your voice. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, we've highlighted for the meeting staff some of the serious problems that have occurred with conflicts in previous schedules. And they've changed the process for building the full schedule in hopes of avoiding that, and we're giving them very explicit input on communities that are interested in various topics and how to schedule things to minimize the conflicts. So you'll be receiving a draft full schedule in the near future that hopefully will meet your needs better. The two key issues that will be a focus of Seoul, of course, will be the applicant guidebook and new GTLDs, as well as the fast-track IDN. So the schedule is being built with an eye towards front-loading it, if you will, making sure that we have the best time set aside to have the public briefings and public discussions on all of those issues relating to new GTLDs and IDNs early in the week and in more convenient time slots to make sure that all the attendees have an opportunity to participate.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions on schedule? Okay, we'll be working on it. I'll have it as an agenda item also on the next meeting, and then shortly after that we'll need to have closed it. So please, on the list, make suggestions, look it over on the wiki, add comments on the wiki. Basically, I'd like to get the agenda going as quickly as possible. Any other comments? Okay, then we move to the status, which, thanks to Philip, this time should go quicker. And as I said, we'd start with 8.8, which was restructuring efforts. Now, Rob already gave us quite a bit of status in that, so there may not be that much more to be said. Certainly, there was the status of the bylaw amendments, where Margie had put out a list of the amendments and a side-by-side comparison. Were there any comments or questions pending in terms of the status of bylaw amendments? Okay. Moving on. Stakeholder group charters. Rob did give us an update on where that was at. Are there any questions or comments related to stakeholder group charters at this time? Okay. Thank you. Constituency charters. Rob also covered that in his presentation. Are there any comments or questions related to constituency charters at this point? Okay, no. Then moving on. 8.7, which was the one we were going to do next, which was the report on improvements. The policy process PDP work team sent in a report. Any questions or comments? Moving on. So working group work team sent in a report. Are there any questions or comments? Okay. The OSC Communications Coordination Work Team sent in a report. Questions or comments? None.
Avery, this is Rob.
Yes, Rob.
My only query on that, and you all may have worked out these logistics, but given that there have been written reports that you're asking folks to comment on and there are none, will those reports be appended to the minutes?
They've certainly already been appended to the agenda, and I guess appending them to the minutes makes sense as a way to do it.
Just a question. I didn't have a position.
That would be reasonable, except in the case of some like Denise's board ones, where what it's included by reference to a URL. On the Constituency Operations Work Team, there was a report. Any questions? It does look like all of these groups are really making very good progress. And then finally, on the OSC Council Operations Work Team. Okay? And hopefully, one comment on that is that it mentions the constituency feedback. Those who haven't done feedback yet, for example, me, and I don't know who else, should probably get that done real soon if they're going to get it. And also, we do need to pass to them the information about how to handle status in the meetings. Okay, moving on. 8.1 was the board update from Denise, and also there was a certain discussion during Rob's discussions. Are there any questions or comments on the board activities? Okay. CCNSO liaison update. Olga sent in a report. Any questions? Okay. Geographical region update, and I already included one question. A report was sent in by Olga and Zaid, talking about the initial report having been sent out for public comment, a 35-day public comment. My question to the GNSO is any GNSO action in terms of commenting warranted and desired? And I need to know that, whether I need to try and schedule in something, whether we need to put together a quick group to comment, or whether it's something that we just want to leave it to the individual constituency and council member to comment or such as they please individually. Any comments on that question? No comments on that question. I'll take that as a no until somebody speaks up otherwise. But it's another question that we can certainly take to the list, and perhaps I'll initiate the question on the list just to make sure that people have had a time to think about it. On joint ACSO efforts, there's been no report, so I guess we could skip over that for the moment, although we did talk about we have more meetings going on the RAA with ALAC and still have to figure that out. On policy items, there have been no reports on those. Now, is there anything we need to talk about, or do we just skip over those for this meeting?
There's one thing that Edmund wanted me to raise that he had to leave the call.
Thank you.
He indicated that there's some interest to publish an ad hoc draft report for the registration abuse working group, and he indicated that if that's really the case, he thinks it needs to go to public comments before any of the recommendations should be considered. His second point was that there was interest in expanding the recommendations for who is. And he stated that if that's the case, he suggested that we relook at the scope of that particular working group.
Okay, this is in terms of the studies working group or the who is with regard to registration abuse?
Right, registration
abuse. Okay. So that's possibly something that should be floated in an email on the list. To have some ongoing discussion on, I would recommend. I don't know. Does anyone else wish to comment on it at this point? Especially as we are 2 minutes over our 2 hours at the moment. Okay. In which case, for the next meeting, it would be good if the liaisons could submit a report before the meeting as the request. On drafting teams, The travel policy drafting team has posted a message, and I'll be sending back the reference item in terms of travel to Seoul to them to see if there's any action they want to recommend. On the IDN working group team update, just a note that it's on hold while we're getting the JIG underway. Any questions or comments on any of the status items? Okay, thank you. Anything else before I close the meeting? Nope. In which case, it was a pleasure talking to you all today, and see you on the list, and talk to you again in 3 weeks, if not sooner, in meetings.
Thanks, Aubrey.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thanks.